Let me just say you have a kind and diplomatic gentleman in the seminary professor and president here. At the college, we take a different approach, Barry. We just say, do these things or we'll hunt you down and hurt you. But I think yours is probably the more biblical way to go. I'd like to read with you two passages that are separated. I want to comment before I read them. They're in Mark chapter 6. And I want to just explain why I'm doing it the way I'm doing it, and then the particular emphasis I would like to give, which is in many ways thinking ahead for some of you, although it's current for others of you, in the way I want to treat this. I've called this message, Just One More Thing. Just One More Thing. And in the first part, I'm going to read to you, Jesus sends out representatives serve and preach and do miracles in the communities of Galilee. And then there's a break where I'm not going to read. It's about what happens with John the Baptist at the hands of Herod. I'm going to skip over that part. And then I'm going to pick up with verse 30, which is then sort of what happens next after they have done their itineration and come back and report. And then sort of a surprising thing that happens. And I think then you'll see why it's just one more thing. So Mark chapter 6, starting with verse 7. Mark 6, 7. Jesus summoned the 12 and began to send them out in pairs, and he was giving them authority over unclean spirits. And he instructed them that they should take nothing for their journey except a mere staff, no bread, no bag, no money in their belt, but to wear sandals, and he added, and do not put on two tunics. And he said to them, wherever you enter a house, stay there until you leave town. And any place that does not receive you or listen to you as you go out from there, shake off the dust from the soles of your feet as a testimony against them. And they went out and preached that men should, or the people should, repent. And they were casting out many demons, and they were anointing with oil many sick people and healing them. Okay, so exciting things happening there. Now, we don't know how long this lasts, but we pick up in verse 30. I don't know whether to say days later or weeks later. We simply don't know. Okay, but I'm going to pick up with verse 30. And when they had finished their itineration, the apostles gathered together with Jesus, and they reported to him all that they had done and taught. And he said to them, come away by yourselves to a lonely place and rest a while, for there were many people coming and going, and they didn't even have time to eat. And they went away in the boat to a lonely place, or an isolated place, by themselves. Now, we could just say generally they're somewhere in the northern region of Lake Galilee, but beyond that, we don't know exactly where. Maybe up northeast past Bethsaida, we don't know. Now, the people saw them going, and many recognized them, and they ran there together on foot from all the cities and got to that location ahead of them. And after they had disembarked, he saw a great multitude, and he felt compassion for them. He saw a great multitude, and he felt compassion for them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And so he began to teach them many things. And it was already getting quite late, and the disciples came up to Jesus and began saying, this place is desolate, and it's quite late. Send them away so they may go into the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat. But he answered and said to them, well, you give them something to eat. And they said to him, shall we go and spend 200 denarii on bread? By the way, that's 200 days' wages on bread, and give them something to eat. And he said to them, well, how many loaves do you have? Go look. And when they found out, they said, five plus two fish. And by the way, little fish, little fish. And so he directed them all to recline by groups on the green grass. So it's springtime. We can tell us that much, okay? And so they reclined in companies of hundreds and of fifties, and he took the five loaves and the two fish, And looking up towards heaven, he blessed and broke the loaves and kept giving them to the disciples to set before them. And he divided up the two fish among them all. And they all ate. And they were satisfied. And they picked up 12 full baskets of the broken pieces as well as of the fish. And there were 5,000 men who ate the loaves. Who knows how many women, children, and puppies tagging along. Very large group. I want to simply reflect for a few minutes with you on inconvenient expectations. If you haven't had these yet, you will, just a matter of time. And in the right circumstances, you'll have these with some frequency. Inconvenient expectations. What I mean by that is you've done something worthwhile. You've invested yourself in tasks, people, doing the right kinds of things, spending time where you need to, and doing good things. And you know this, by the way, those of you who have children, you know this is very true with children, but it's true with congregations, it's true at workplaces, true sometimes with neighbors. I mean, the list goes on and on. And then just as you sort of felt, well, I've really done what I need to do, just one more thing comes your way. And I'm sure many of you have had this, maybe most of you have had this already. And again, it'll happen one way or the other. And this is a little bit of a story. This is about many things going on here. I'm being very selective, and I want to acknowledge that our first and second readings I put right next to each other because the sequence and the logic and the result are closely connected together. Put yourself in the apostles' shoes. You've been given an amazing authorization to go out, cast out demons, heal sick people. And we don't know how long they've done it for, but they have walked. And I want to just pause on this. Imagine walking distances that crisscross the diameter of Pittsburgh. You walked the 2 to 5 to 10 miles to get to, you know, Sewickley. And then you walked over to, Monroeville, let's say. And then you walked over to, and you fill in the places. And you did this for who knows how long, and you didn't know each time where exactly you were going to stay. There'd be a place for you, but you weren't sure. And when you got there, you simply sometimes went to sleep and then continued the next day. And when they come back together, all right, Jesus recognized their need for what we call today personal space, a little bit of place to rest, take a break. But you can understand it pretty easily. I think if you came back from that kind of an experience, right, you would say, wow, what an amazing opportunity, but boy, do I need a break. Reminds me of my father and stepmother in the 1980s, some of the first Americans I met to go tour in China, and they came back excited. And she said to me, Jonathan, it was a wonderful vacation, and I need a vacation from the vacation. Okay? They love China, but they also needed some space. I think of that when I think of them coming back. And yet, and we've all read what happened here, and yet, somehow, someone, we don't know who, maybe within the apostles or someone heard someone talking, someone leaked it onto Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. They're headed for this place over here. If you want to, they're going by boat. You make a beeline by foot, and you can get there ahead of time and see what the good news is. And that's exactly what they did. And I want to just think a little bit about then what happens. Because what happens is, Jesus felt compassion. And if you want to be honest with yourself and with others, and this time's to do that, you say to yourself, you know, sometimes I have to admit, I may do the right thing. I'm not sure I've done it for all the right motives. You know, I attended to so-and-so. I made that extra visit to the hospital. I spent that extra time with this household that was in crisis. You know, I put in the extra effort behind the scenes. No one talked about it to clean up someone's mess somewhere. And the list of possibilities is endless. And you know, you say to yourself, "I did the right thing," although sometimes, you know, I might have fussed a little bit in the process, or I just did it because no one else was around to do it. And here's Jesus meeting up with this mob, if you will, that not only was mobbing them where they started off, but then beats them to location and then again mobs them. Why? Because they want, because they need, because they're asking. Maybe some are demanding, I don't know. And I'm going to put two things next to each other, and they're both true. On the one hand, Jesus is able to look at them as they come together at the second place. I just want to read it again. You know the words. Because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And so he ministered to them. Now hold on to that for 1 second. Because that's something, that's an insight and a heart and a desire God gives people. But that's not the whole picture. Guess what? To get the other half of the picture, you have to fast forward about, well, I don't know, less than 24 hours. And you can, I'm not going to read it, but you can read that around John 5, 6, 7, 8. And the next day, after the feeding, the famous feeding of the 5,000, some of the very, very same people are at the jugular. Right? You know, you do these things by the prince of the demons, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And many, it says, that night, less than 24 hours later, this excited crowd that he perceives as sheep without a shepherd, because they were. They needed mercy. But on the other hand, the next day, frankly, not all of them, but many of them were absolutely unwilling to give or show any mercy. So two seemingly incompatible pictures, but there we are. Anyway, back to this. So I'm wondering how many apostles rolled how many eyes when he saw them like this and begin to teach them, and they're just ready to take a break. You know, the hotel is in sight, the picnic bench, you can just see off to the edge here, and someone's bringing food, and you're just about ready to sit down. Oh no, just one more thing. Oh my. But there it is. And you wonder, you know, who is most tired? Jesus, who once fell asleep in a boat on a storm, okay? Or the people who were hungry and apparently genuinely needed food. And you know how it is when you get hangry, right? That's some of that going on here. Or the apostles who are sort of strung between, these are the experiences of a lifetime, but just one more. Wow. There we are. By the way, it's interesting. Jesus sits them down by groups of 50s and 100s. Do you realize this is crowd control? Not necessary. Maybe you saw the news out of India roughly, you know, a month ago. A public event, stampede, many people killed. You know, just no one intended it. Just it happened. Sits them down orderly. One of the images out of the gospel is by groups. It's almost, someone said, like laying out flower beds on a hillside and then distributing them in an orderly way. This is part of compassion, orderliness, times to do things within reason. I don't mean obsession with orderliness, but orderliness, timeliness are important, right? And 5,000 or more. By the way, there's only two miracles, as I understand it, only two miracles in all four gospels, right? One of them is the resurrection of Jesus. The other is this one. Spectacular. What an experience. But here's the thing of just one more thing. And so I want to raise a question with you all and just think about it and have you think about it for a couple minutes, because I think I can reasonably say, after being four decades at it, yes, I'm now on Medicare, don't remind me, you'll actually reflect on this stuff again and again. Okay, I have. You're called somewhere to do something. And by the way, callings can change for the time and the season. But I'm just saying, at any particular time, you're called in part here to be students, right? That's part of your calling. That's not the whole thing, but it's part of it. And when you can identify what you're called to do and called to be, are you not all that much more ready to take on maybe just one more thing? By the way, I want to acknowledge something, and then we're going to come back to this. There are times to put in boundaries. That's another message for another time, okay? Times to say to people, at least not today, maybe never. There's a place for boundaries. There absolutely is. So that's another thing we can talk about next time, okay? But I want to just explore the just one more thing part right now. Okay? You're called to something. And it seems to me when you're called to something, if you're serious about the call, and I hope you will be, and I hope you are, that you're then going to ask, where can I respond positively to just one more thing, whether it's an expectation of something that gets taken care of, an expectation of a personal nature, someone who's really in need, and those things sometimes pop up just at the wrong time, as we say, all right? Because here's an observation. Sometimes it's under the most difficult circumstances, the most difficult circumstances, when an unusual expectation actually becomes an unusual opportunity. Briefly, sidebar, I'm coming right back to this. 18 months ago, so I was coming back from helping to paint my daughter's house in Ohio. I stopped in a little gas station in Unity, Ohio. Has anyone even heard of Unity, Ohio? Believe me, it's there if you have to look for it with a microscope. And I was hurt. I was in pain from working all day. I was disgustingly dirty and smelly, paint all over me. I couldn't get my card to work at the gas station. I was frustrated because the machine wouldn't work. Stupid machine. And I went in annoyed to pay, and I did. I didn't run out there without paying, I promise. That was a mistake I made years earlier, but the police caught up with me, and it was all settled. 1992 Beaver Falls. I paid. Anyway, as I'm paying, I said to the gas station attendant, I said, I'm hearing an Arabic accent in Unity, Ohio? He said, yes, I'm from Palestine. He's a Palestinian Muslim. And I start talking with him, and he asks what I do, and we just talk. I said, I haven't been to your town, but I've been very close to it. And he just opened up. And as I'm talking with him, and he says, what do you do? And I say, well, I'm a professor at Geneva College. He goes, okay, he's never heard of it, but that's okay. And then the guy behind me, who's tattooed from neck to ankle, okay, and it's summertime, so we're wearing shorts and T-shirts. You can see them all. He's got Plato, he's got Aristotle, he's got Socrates, and then Zoroastrian themes kind of connecting them all. He behind me says, wait a minute, you're a professor. I said, yeah. He goes, what do you think of Jordan Peterson? And I said, you've heard of Jordan Peterson? He says, are you kidding? I love the guy. And we start talking theology. So I'm talking, I don't know Arabic, but talking Palestine with this guy, turning around this way, talking. And, you know, 18 months later, I'm still visiting with these two people. Okay. They're neither as a believer. And I don't know where the friendships will go. But that was the most inconvenient moment at the worst time. I just want to get home and get a shower and take some aspirin. And it was unusual. So back to this. I want to read a quote. Maybe you've heard part of this quote. The gentleman who wrote this, a Presbyterian pastor and writer, actually quite a creative writer, who just passed away just a couple of months ago, Frederick Buechner. Frederick Buechner talks about calling and the sense of rising to the occasion. And he says it quite well. Now, I'm going to read the opening part of the quotation. You may have only heard the last part, and I had to dig a little bit to find this. He said, he's talking about the Latin vocare, to call, meaning, you know, the work one's called to do. And Buechner says, there are all different kinds of voices calling you to do all different kinds of work, and the problem is to find out which is the voice of God rather than the voice of society or the voice of the superego or the voice of self-interest. Very insightful. He says, by and large, he actually talks quite at length, which I'm not going to read. There's a good rule for finding this out, because the work God usually calls you to is the kind of work that you need most to do and that the world most needs to have done. Now, he says a lot more, but I'm not going to get it. I'm going to jump to the very closing of this quotation. He concludes, the place God calls you to is the place where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet. The place God calls you to, the place where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet. And I think in those places, maybe we sometimes can gather together what feels like a just out of time expectation for the just one more thing and reach the opportunity. Amen. I'll end it there. I'm going to sing from 4B. Thank you. After we sing, I'd like to pray briefly after we've sung. Okay?
4B, let's stand to sing that.